Time for the Friday edition of Hancock and Kelly.
You two belong together.
John Hancock, Michael Kelly on News Radio 1120, KMOX.
It's an absolutely spectacular day.
Very lovely out there.
To think a week ago, we were like at single digits.
It was cold.
And so now it's going to be 70 degrees today.
It is?
Don't you love it?
70 today.
70. It's going to hit us high of 70 degrees.
You got to love that.
Don't you love it?
Late February. It's the last day of February.
Yeah. It's a head fake, though, right? We'll have a couple of 70-degree days, and then we're going to get another little snow, blah, blah, blah.
No, I don't know if we'll get more snow at this point, but you never know.
Well, of course we always get snow. It's still early. We've had snow all the way up to opening day before, which, by the way, opening day's in March this year.
I know. It's wonderful. I predict we will not have snow.
Hmm. Are we going to make a wager on that?
$20.
Yeah, now you and I made a wager
last week.
And we're going to deal with that at 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
So for those of you who are interested in
the outcome,
our jumping contest, we will share that at 9 o'clock. But
here,
you know this about me. I have some sensitivity with the sun that when I go from inside to outside on a sunny day in particular, I start to sneeze
at least three times.
So. That's problematic when you're getting up. Now, even with my sunglasses on, I'm going to wind up sneezing. And so this morning, we're now at that time of year where I get up and driving downtown on Olive and Lindell. I got that sun
right
in my eyes.
Try getting on 40 out in Chesterfield and driving east. Horrible.
Is it a problem for you?
Well, so I wear contact lenses usually. But I'm giving my eyes a little break from that, and I'm wearing my glasses. I don't think much about it. But I need the glasses to see distance.
Uh-huh.
So I get in the car this morning wearing my glasses so I can see the road and the cars out there. I get on the highway, the sun.
Did you pull the flap down?
So the flap's always down.
The flap's down,
but, the sun, so I'm thinking, how am I going to do this, So I take my glasses off. I'm driving now.
Right.
I take my glasses off. I'm effectively blind. and I put my sunglasses on, and then I very carefully.
Were you just seeing shapes?
It was just a big blur, and I'm trying not to hit somebody. So then I put my glasses on over my sunglasses.
Oh.
Which is a very difficult balancing act.
That's a grandpa thing.
Yeah. It's not easily balanced because my sunglasses, anyway.
Maybe you could get those sunglasses that are like cases that wrap around regular glasses, like real old people. You know what I'm talking about?
My mom had a pair of those. So I had to balance there. My nose is not that big. I don't have, I'm not blessed with a
large nose.
Yeah. So
would you like a bigger nose?
Well, if you're going to wear two pairs of glasses, it would help to have a little bigger nose. And so, but I made it. But I had to be very careful. I couldn't move my head much, or my glasses would fall off. So, and of course, now, you got to have two hands on the steering
wheel. Here's a secret for you: when you're getting a new pair of glasses, which will be what, another year or so?
I don't know.
You take the existing ones you have right now.
Yeah.
Prescription ones. When you go get your new glasses, tell them, I want you to make these into sunglasses for me. And then you'll have a pair of your distance glasses that will have the sunglass tint on them.
Well, I'm just going to put my contact lenses back in because that's
a. But you're giving your eyes a rest.
I am, but they've rested enough.
Oh,
they're ready.
Is it just something? I'm not a contact lens wearer, so this is just something that happens. You know it's time to give yourself
A couple 3 days, and then you go back. Of course, I can't play snooker wearing glasses, so.
You can't?
No. So I'm going to have to put the contact lens back in.
Huh. So this weekend, we can anticipate you back in the contact.
Yes, and now that the sun is out of the way in people's eyes driving down the highways,
talked about the Cardinals 1985 World Series win. Remember the song?
Ago.
Remember the 40 years.
40 years.
Think about that.
Yeah.
40 years. Doesn't feel like it, does
it? I remember it well.
Yeah. Wish you could go back to it?
Game six. No, I am very, very happy with my current stage of life.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Being a grandpa?
Yeah. I mean,
Well, if...
Still have several years of work left to do, I'm very content.
That's a good place to be, brother.
It is a good
That's
place
a healthy
to be.
Place to
it
be.
Is.
Well, if you want to find out if Grandpa can jump, we're going to deal with that at 9 o'clock, and we'll recap it from last week's conversation. Normal listeners of the Hancock and Kelly Show come in at this segment for politics.
Politics.
It's time for our weekly political segment.
Let's dig in.
John, President Zelensky of the Ukraine will be coming to Washington, D.C. next week to potentially sit down with President Trump, negotiate some type of settlement related to minerals, and Zelensky obviously needing some promises of United States security against potential future Russian aggression. This is on top of President Trump calling Zelensky a dictator, essentially,
which he backed
said
away
he
from
didn't remember
yesterday.
Saying that,
right?
And flipping the entire foreign policy as it relates to the United States dealing with Russia on its head. What do you expect next week, man? Zelensky's coming, and I guess this is part of what people like about Donald Trump is everybody's unsettled. Nobody really knows what's going to happen. What do you expect?
I don't know. I certainly there's not going to be an agreement to end the hostilities. The meeting with President Putin is in the future, I suppose, and I'm still somewhat doubtful that you're going to get a situation where Russia will agree to something, say Russia and the U.S. agree to something that will include allowing Russia to keep the region of the Donbass that they've already taken, obviously continue to control Crimea, which they took 10 years ago. I don't think Zelensky will go for that deal, if that's what the deal is, with some promise of an end to hostilities. So if there's no deal, that means this war, which has basically been fought to a stalemate at this point, will continue on. And then the question becomes, what role does the U.S. play? Do we continue to supply needed military weaponry to Ukraine, or do we turn that all over to Western Europe to fund? And that's what's unknown at this point.
Well, it sure seems like President Zelensky's coming into a negotiation against two superpowers. And look, we've all seen the photos of what Ukraine looks like right now. It's just nothing more than rubble. Here's a man whose family, life, his citizens are there. They want to rebuild their lives. They don't really have a leg to push back from. Won't that be the responsibility of Europe to potentially represent Ukraine if Donald Trump's all in for Vladimir Putin?
Yeah, and we don't know at this point where Trump is ultimately going to end up on this thing. I mean, his rhetoric is one thing, but we don't know where he's going to end up ultimately here. There's a lot of speculation that he's going to side and take whatever terms Putin wants to put out there, but we don't know that. And yeah, I do think Europe will continue to support Ukraine. And here's the thing in Europe. If Putin believes that he can go into a sovereign country and take land, take territory, he's done it now twice in Ukraine. He has invaded Georgia. He's effectively controls Belarus today. All of these countries independent from the Soviet Union after the collapse of the Soviet Union. And he's systematically trying to reconstruct that old empire. And I don't think there's very much comfort level in Europe that if they reach a ceasefire arrangement in Ukraine, that Putin's going to stop there. You know, you've got NATO countries that are threatened, Poland chief among them. But you've also got countries to the south of Ukraine that are not NATO members that Putin would have designs on as well. So there's just a lot of uncertainty around this thing, and I don't know that it's going to be easily resolved. I don't think it's going to be easily resolved.
Well, something will come to a head next week when President Zelensky and President Trump meet together in Washington, D.C. Hold your breath. We'll be watching. Presidents Trump and Musk had a cabinet meeting the other day, John, where there was a briefing on all the activities related to what's going on with Doge. Elon Musk at the cabinet meeting, not a member of the cabinet officially, and was the only one who spoke publicly, and he did it for about 20 minutes, justifying what they're up to, saying they have to make these cuts, et cetera, et cetera. Got the president to reinforce that these emails, tell me what you've done, five things you've done, et cetera.
Now, do you have a problem with that?
Yes and no. I guess my problem with it is that it's absurd that this is being sent out by some independent group of tech nerds But the fact that an employee would be held accountable to their bosses, absolutely not.
Right, okay.
But we have a structure of government, and we have handbooks, and we have jobs. I mean, look, this is a technique. The technique that Elon Musk is used in the corporate world. You come in, you take a sledgehammer to something, you find out what really needed to be there, and you try to reconstruct it. It may make some sense in the business world. I don't think it's the way you run a government, but I know that y'all, in the same way that you've demonized government, I'm talking about conservatives and Republicans, yeah. The way that you've all demonized government over the last several years, you've kept saying, you all, meaning the general you all, have said that you've got to run government like a business, and I think that's a ridiculous thought.
I don't. You will admit, I would assume, that they have uncovered some ridiculous spending, right?
Yeah.
And the fact that that spending exists and has not been rooted out, and remember, we've gone through a couple of decades here where when Republicans have held the White House and the Congress, non-defense discretionary spending has been reduced significantly over that time, and yet still some of this wasteful spending is still taking place. So I'm not crazy about the fact that Doge is being run by a guy who gets billions of dollars from the federal government. I think that's a conflict.
Right.
But the fact that they're going in and really examining how these tax dollars
are spent. That's not what's happening, though, John. Look what they did at USAID.
Okay. Let's take that, though. Because there was a lot of mess in USAID. A lot of it. And I think the idea is to put that program under the State Department, which is where all the other foreign aid that we give is managed. It seems that there is some efficiency, perhaps, in that. Now, what I hope doesn't happen, and I'm fearful it could, given the populist rhetoric that comes out of the administration, I hope we don't just kill off the foreign aid program altogether, because that is a vital part of our national security and our international relations.
I think what we're doing under the guise of what you were just enticed by, which is we're rooting out some of this stuff, yeah. There's no doubt about it. You ever played the game Jenga?
No.
The little log game where you pull a log.
Yeah.
It seems to me, you know, we've got to have a tower that goes to a certain height. And what we've done is we run in and we've knocked over the tower and we're going to now try to rebuild it. May make some sense in the corporate world. May make some sense on Wall Street. And I don't see how it pays off in the government. Sure, you may eliminate some programs immediately that don't have immediate effects. Kind of like not having the guy come inspect your air conditioner every year. You may get by with it for a year or two. But when it blows up, it's going to cost you 10 times what it costs you to have taken that savings in the beginning.
Yeah, I don't think I agree with that. No. I think that reducing the size and reach of the federal government is a principle that I've supported my entire life. And I have concerns about this particular approach, clearly. But as a matter of principle, I'm okay with taking a magnifying glass in there and looking at the waste and getting rid of it. As I say, USAID is a good example of an agency. It was created, 60 years ago? But it's an example of an agency who's got the same function as what the State Department is doing. And in some respects, it's duplicative.
I'm okay with a magnifying glass as well. I just don't understand why we're hitting it with a sledgehammer before we put it under the magnifying glass. Hey, John, the mayor's election's happening next week. It's this primary,
it's happening and it's not happening.
Right, so it's happening on Tuesday of next week, although you can early vote in the city of St. Louis. And again, I give much credit to the election board. It's just a flawless, smooth operation in the city.
The counties is really good, too.
So take advantage of it. It's going on in the county. But in the city, we have this new voting way that the progressives brought us, John, where you can vote for everybody. It's like voting for prom queen. Go ahead and choose any of these people that you would like. Vote for them all. They're all good people. It makes no sense. Then we get down to two where we're going to have a fight that's going to take place. I think we all can admit watching this that the mayor finds herself in a politically vulnerable spot.
I agree.
After the articles that have come out, some of the trials and tribulations she's gone with, and not to mention this snowstorm. She's being faced by her former opponent, Kara Spencer, who only lost by 1,000 votes or so a time before. But you also have Michael Butler and Jimmy Robertson in this race as well. It's an interesting dynamic to be able to handicap and judge who and how someone comes out of it.
Yeah, what I find shocking is how few people actually vote in the city. I mean, that you look at the percentage of the electorate that's actually deciding who the mayor is going to be. It's tiny, and it's going to be, I think it's going to be a fairly close election. I expect Spencer to finish first and Jones to finish second. Those two will then face off in the real election, which will be in April of this year.
That is right. Hey, when we come back, John, we're going to step aside for the news. We're going to talk about White Man Can't Jump.
Hey.
The conversation we had last week, you're going to love it.
Time for the Friday edition of Hancock and Kelly.
You two belong together.
John Hancock, Michael Kelly on News Radio 1120, KMOX.
Well, Jim Thorpe.
Yeah.
Last week,
we had a conversation. I didn't anticipate it. We were just kind of visiting. And for those of you who may have missed it, this is what was said 1 week ago today. I played a little basketball in high school, you know.
What position were you?
Forward.
Forward? Yeah, big, tall guy?
Yeah.
Could you jump up and touch the net?
The net?
Yeah.
Yeah, buddy. I could touch the rim.
You could?
I can still touch. Well.
You could still touch. Go ahead. Finish your thought. I'm telling you right now, I don't think you could touch the net.
Of course I could touch the net.
Right now, in today's condition.
Yes.
And today, you think you could go out and jump up and touch the net on a basketball hoop?
Oh, piece of cake. I got money on this.
How much? Name it.
$20.
Let's go.
I'm in.
Let's go. This must
I have to do is touch the net.
Yeah, no, you can't use a stepladder or something.
I'm going to jump up and touch the net. So there it was.
There it was.
And I will confess, no. I sounded very confident there.
Yeah.
But I have to, I mean, you know, it's a little bit, it's like an Airbus. I mean, somehow that thing's got to get off the ground, you know, and fly.
So all weekend long, people are coming up to me saying, you're going to lose money to Hancock. And I'm like, what? And they're like, he's going to be able to touch the net. Because I have a friend of mine who's, you know, 5'8" or 9", yeah. And he's like, I can still get up there and touch the net. I said, well, have you seen Hancock?
So now, yeah, I'm a grandpa. So there I was. It was Tuesday morning of this week, Tuesday. Mm-hmm. And I've got a meeting at the Commons, which is a facility that our church bought. It used to be Gold's Gym.
Okay.
Right there on Clayton Road. Mm. And so they got the
place you visited regularly.
They got the basketball court in there. Nobody was using it at 9:30 in the morning. So I strolled in, turned the light on.
Oh my gosh.
I'm walking towards one of the nets. They got, you know, I don't know, eight basketball goals in there, all of them 10 feet high. And so there I am, got my Skechers on. I'm wearing a pair of blue jeans, a shirt, a vest, and a lightweight jacket. and I walk and I turn on the iPhone.
Who's there?
Nobody.
Just you.
It's just me.
Okay.
So I turn the iPhone thing on there to record.
Uh-huh.
So I'm holding an iPhone.
Right.
Standing under the net, I count to three. One, two, three. I jump up. I touch the net.
Okay.
With all of that garb on and holding an iPhone, I touched the net, and I sent you the video.
He sent me the video. Now, folks, the video looks like body cam footage of a guy who's getting tossed around. All you see is a concrete wall. You see no gymnasium. You see no net. You see no John Hancock. You see the cinder block walls and the mats that they put against them, the cushions that they put against them when people hit them.
It's a fine gym.
He then jumps. It jumps about 2 or 3 inches. It kind of goes up, and then it goes back down. And he says, I did it, Kelly. I did it.
I did.
And so then you sent it around. Now, listen, I still don't know that this happened. I'm not sure why you would do a video and not actually take the video. But I'm a man of my word.
Yeah.
And I'm throwing the $20 out right
all
now.
Right, all right.
And I'm here to tell you that if there's ever a video.
I don't lie.
If there's ever a video that actually shows you touching the net, I will back it up.
So we need to
with
do
another
this.
$20.
So the fact that I'm holding an iPhone, and it's clearly me because you can hear my voice talking there.
Right.
And it's clearly a gym because you could see me approaching the net with the iPhone.
But John, I couldn't see you touch the net.
I understand because the phone, I didn't have the phone
at
the proper
angle. No, the
phone
was faced at the wall. Yeah. We don't even see you in it. We don't even see the net. We don't even see the hoop. We literally see a camera moving, staring at a wall, going up, coming back down, and you saying, I did it.
So but basically, you're saying that this is some sort of Zapruder film that I've produced.
It has to be. But listen, that's why I'm willing to back this up with another 20 for video of you actually touching
the net. So we're going to have to do this again, I guess. First and only try, I touched the net. Now, I didn't get a lot of the net. I didn't get halfway up the net. But again, Skechers, blue jeans, shirt, vest, lightweight jacket, holding an iPhone. I got the old index finger and the old middle finger right there.
Right into
touching the bottom two.
Okay.
Ringlets on the net.
We got kegs and eggs coming up, don't we, Frank? Big KMOX. I wonder if we can get a basketball hoop around where kegs and eggs is.
Oh.
And we could have a little audience for you when you do your
All I know, what I thought I knew a week ago, I now know for sure.
Okay.
That I can touch the net.
All right.
At my advanced age as a grandpa, I can still touch the net.
I have a feeling that we'll continue to examine this as time goes on because it's kind of like the hole-in-one. Was it a really net touching? Was it really a hole-in-one when you're on a putt-putt, et cetera?
A putt-putt. It was not a putt-putt.
Now, let me ask you this. When you walked into the gym, you turned the lights on.
I did turn the light on.
There's nobody there.
Nobody.
Are you concerned that... Okay, I'm going to take a little run at this thing. I'm going to jump up to do it. I might twist my ankle, break my leg, fall down, and I'm going to be Gene Hackman and in the middle of this, not able to get up.
No, because, I know it's hard for some to believe, but inside this body of mine is a highly toned athlete.
Yeah.
I got the soul of an athlete, Michael. And I didn't take a running start. I squatted down,
John,
I jumped up.
No, we saw the video. There's movement there. Well, I mean, the video is, I don't know. I mean, it doesn't really prove much.
I'm going to have a witness the next time I do this that takes the video because,
Now back in the day, honestly, you could jump up and touch the rim.
Oh yeah. Oh
really?
Yeah. I couldn't dunk. I couldn't get over the rim and put the ball in.
Neither.
But I could touch the rim, yeah.
Well, my hands weren't big enough to get around the ball when I was little, when I was growing. Now I could – I don't know that I can palm an NBA basketball. I think I could get close to it. But I know I could get up and touch the net. I couldn't touch the rim anymore.
What I couldn't do is touch the rim with both hands.
Uh-huh.
I could touch it with my right hand.
Yeah, just with one hand.
Yeah, right. Right,
now,
right.
My basketball coach back in the day, when you're in eighth grade and you're able to get up and touch the net and you think that's a big deal, or when you're John's age, you can get up, touch the net, it's a big deal. He used to tell us, don't do that. Your finger can get caught in that net and it'll pull it off.
Oof.
And that's a visual that's always stayed with me.
Well, that's a terrible thing to say.
So be careful when you go. In fact, I'd like to be there. Maybe we can organize it with kegs and eggs for you to do this jump.
I'm going to get it done tomorrow. I've got
tomorrow.
I'm meeting a guy at that
Who's
same gonna place.
Who's going to come film this?
George, my buddy George.
You're going to ask George to film
it. George will film it.
Okay. And all right.
Yeah.
And I'm not worried about you using AI to doctor it because you don't even know how to get it off your phone.
I can't even.
It's not like you'll cheat on me because you wouldn't know how to.
I just figured out my Apple ID password yesterday.
Did you really?
First time in years. It was wonderful.
Was it the dollar sign or the ampersand?
I can't tell you. It's top secret.
My passwords still to this day are all divisions of the, derivatives of the same
of course.
Password.
Yeah, but you can never remember what derivative you use for which thing.
Yeah.
That's my problem.
But the core meat of it is always the same, and then it's all the other nonsense that you change around it.
Yeah.
So I wanted to buy some tickets to the Dave Matthews concert that's taking place here in St. Louis this summer.
Yeah.
So I'm on my Ticketmaster app, right? And I get in.
Yeah.
Got a chance to get them.
And
I picked the four, and it says, enter your password now. And there's ticker in the corner.
Yeah.
It's counting down from 8 minutes. And so now I've got 8 minutes and three tries to figure out. I was unsuccessful.
Oh.
I was unsuccessful. and being able to
secure. Can't you pick up a phone and call somebody and get tickets?
Interestingly enough, you give old Live Nation or Riverport or whatever it's called, Hollywood Casino, a call, because I did try that.
Yeah.
It's about as effective as calling, customer service at the bank.
So you never, you haven't gotten your tickets in?
No, I haven't secured them because I've got to figure out what my password is
before
I go back through the process of paying for.
Can't you reset your password?
Yes, but that would require me to have access to whatever email, because the Ticketmaster would be somebody who spams you a lot, right? Yeah. Brass Knuckles are coming to town on Wednesday. I bet you want a ticket. No, man, I buy tickets for me twice a year. I don't want your spam.
So you have some random email address that
that deals with my spam.
Okay.
Yeah. Do you have email worthiness people? Like you have your people who are like, oh, you can have my work email. And then other people or other things where you're like, oh, they get my spam email.
So I never had done that until this week.
Really?
Yeah.
What'd you do?
I got a wristwatch for Christmas.
Okay.
I've got skinny little girly wrists.
Uh-huh.
And so I had to get links taken out of it.
Okay.
So I went to the jeweler that I always used to go to when I'd get a new watch.
Uh-huh.
Now it's $20 to take the links out.
Sure.
But you have to fill out this, new customer card you fill out, and they want your email. And so I use my bogus email address.
Yeah.
First time I've ever done that.
It's the best. But then there's an occasional time where you need to get something from American Airlines or from Ticketmaster, and you got to go and figure out what your password now is to your bogus email. And it always tells you that it was probably hacked in a spam.
Exactly.
You get that a lot now?
Everything's
telling me you need to reset your password.
Oh.
You know, it's probably been compromised.
Huh.
But if they're all derivatives of the same thing.
Yeah.
There's got to be, have a better way to do this.
There is. There's a password generator thingy doodle that you can get, and then it remembers.
Do you use it?
No, I don't use it.
Of course not.
Yeah.
And what, because, the Smithsonian's likely to come
just
to your
this
phone
morning,
someday. Huh?
Just this morning to get to watch the semifinals of the World Open Snooker Tournament, I had to remember my password on the World Snooker Tour television app.
Well, there it is.
I got in.
There it is. Well, he's the athlete, John Hancock.
Yeah.
He apparently touched the rim.
He did.
I wish you all could see the video. This will be discussed further with Amy and Chris. I have the 20 here. I'll back it up with another 20. John, when we step aside for the new for some commercials when we come back, Hancock and Kelly, Potpourri. You got plans tonight?
I do.
What are you doing?
So dear friends of mine, of ours, are going out to dinner.
Yeah.
Jack and Lorraine Goldman. Jack Goldman and I served in the legislature together
30-some
years ago. And he was, he's just a buddy.
Yeah. Know? What time are you doing this?
Now that I'm a grandpa times two, I'm doing grandpa things. We have dinner reservations for 5:00 tonight.
Are you getting the green Jell-O special?
The great thing about 5:00 dinner reservations is that I'm often the youngest person in the restaurant.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, listen, I made fun of you.
Yeah.
But this is a little secret.
Okay.
If there are fancy places in town that you want to go to,
yeah,
you've got to show up at around 4:45, 5:00.
Right.
And as a single dude who sometimes wants to go out and have a nice meal, but doesn't want to deal with all the nonsense, I can go at about 4:45, 5:00, sit at the bar, eat a nice meal, out of there in 45 minutes before the entire restaurant fills up. And I'm talking about the most famous restaurants in St. Louis.
That's fascinating.
Yes, and I do this regularly. There's one, I won't say the name on I've told it to you off air.
Yeah.
Because I don't want people showing up and stealing my spot at the bar.
So really, 4:45?
Most places open around 5:00. There's a place in the DeMond area.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know where the DeMond is?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, DeMond right there on the border of the city and the county.
Yeah.
It's called Louis. And it's fabulous Italian food.
Really?
Can't ever get into the doggone place.
Huh.
And so, you got to call. You got to get reservations 2 weeks in advance. I'm not a reservation guy 2 weeks in advance, are you?
Well, we did this reservation 2 weeks in advance.
Well, this was a special occasion.
Still had to be 5:00 because there wasn't nothing later was available.
Right.
And this was like 2 weeks out.
So this Louis place, now a couple of weeks ago, I showed up right at 5:00 and I got in there, ate a beautiful meal and was out of there in 20 minutes and was home by 6:30. I mean, they still have news on and I'm home. I felt like I was about 90.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good. I like eating earlier. And I guess
it's better for you.
Age, it is.
Yeah, you don't want all that food sitting on your belly and going and getting straight in bed.
No, you don't want to eat
right
before
bed. So then your body processes it and stuff. And, I read an article that in like New
York.
That's
shocking. You read an article.
Yeah, in New York, Chicago, the big cities, the valued reservation time used to be that 7 to 9 period.
Yeah, right.
And it's moved up to, since COVID, to 5 to 7.
Huh.
Because people want to get in there and go home and stream. And
well, I will be having a lovely dinner this evening with the Goldmans.
You'll eat the same thing you eat every meal when you go out. You're going to eat steak.
No, well, I might.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
I might not.
I had dinner with you this week twice, didn't I? Or just once?
Twice.
I could have ordered for you.
Yeah.
I could have ordered for you. When the guy came to the table, I was just like, what dead animals do you have on the menu? And which one can you cook at about medium?
Medium rare.
Medium rare.
Yeah, it was good.
Don't you? What is it about the medium rare that you like?
The taste. I just like all of it.
Really?
Yeah.
Have you ever had a steak cooked a little bit more, like to a medium?
Yeah, I have. I occasionally.
The flavor difference?
Well, it's, I don't know.
There's no difference in the flavor. It's probably a little better for you.
Well, you're not doing a side by side taste test, Kelly. It's not like you got a medium rare over here and a medium over there, and you're eating them both at the same time, comparing the flavors.
Yeah.
So it's impossible to say what the taste difference is.
Are you still the master of the Saratoga, or not the Saratoga? What was the name of the steak that you prepare at your house?
The tri-tip.
Are you still the master of the tri-tip?
I haven't made a tri-tip in quite some time.
Still probably can't find it at a butcher's?
It's hard to find.
Yeah?
It's hard to find.
It's a California thing?
It is a California thing.
Yeah, who would have thought you were bringing California things to
lovely
St.
Piece
Louis?
Of, lovely piece of beef out there.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Do you ever eat the ahi tuna?
No.
I would think you'd like it because, you know, they just sear it. On the outside,
yeah,
so it's kind of brown, the inside
fish,
is just
so. Raw fish, basically.
But the taste, John.
Yeah.
You don't like fish, do you?
I do. I mean, I'll eat a fish every now and then.
Well, like when it's fried and tartar sauce?
I had a shrimp the other night.
A shrimp?
Yeah.
Do you consider shrimp to be like eating fish?
It's a fish. Shrimp's a fish.
I know it is, but I don't put it in the same.
Isn't shrimp a fish, Frank?
Sure. But I don't all put right. it in the same category as
what's a fish?
Is eating fish.
But it's a fish, Michael.
Because I think shrimp are like full of cholesterol.
It's one of the four
stuff,
food groups out there. You got your meat over here. You got your fish.
Yeah.
But
I think when I think of a fish, I think of more a fish, not an eyeless animal like shrimp that are just little, what are
shrimps
they, mollusks
have eyes.
Or something that are bouncing around?
Shrimps have eyes.
Do they?
Yeah.
Are you positive with that?
The Muppet character that's a shrimp has got eyes.
Hmm. I know that sometimes when you get crawdads, or not what they go, you know, like when you go to New Orleans and you eat the crawdads, right?
Crayfish, whatever.
They have the eyes. I don't like that.
Yeah.
I don't want to look at whatever I'm eating.
No, I don't want the food looking at me. Either.
When they bring the fish out with the head still there, you're like, wait a minute, why did I come to a restaurant?
I'm not
I don't
doing
want to look
this.
At that. No, and then when they leave the eyes in it, it's just not appropriate.
It's no good. The sardines are the same way.
Hey, speaking of things that may have met an untimely passing.
Yeah.
There could be a major change coming in the world as there is a vigil over Pope Francis. We're going to talk about the political impact of Pope Francis and what's next in this political world we're living in. You know, AI runs the world now, right? And
that's what they say.
I just typed in, is shrimp a fish?
Of course it is.
Shrimps are crustaceans, which means they are more closely related to crabs and lobsters than fish. It's considered to be a shellfish.
A shell what?
Fish.
I rest my case, Your Honor.
Huh.
They call it a fish.
Okay.
It's a shell fish.
So
ergo,
how about those wings from fish. The buffalo that I eat, huh?
What?
Those buffalo wings I eat? Those buffalo can grow some nice wings under your logic.
No, it's named after because it was invented in Buffalo, New York.
Shellfish, I mean, come on, dude.
It's fish.
It's fish.
There.
But I guess I'm just talking about the kind that swim, not the ones that have the concrete shells and all that.
Well, shrimps swim.
I guess. Hey, brother. Pope Francis, 88 years old.
Yes, he is.
Finds himself in the hospital this evening. There's signs of improvement. In recent days, the Pope has been resting. He woke up this morning and ate breakfast, read a few newspapers, and he continues his treatment for breathing and respiratory issues.
Mm-hmm.
Inevitably, the Pope is dealing with old age, and I think it's anticipated that we will have a new Pope soon.
Yeah.
And I think about Pope Francis, he was a real shift in the political landscape of not only the Catholic Church, but the entire world, because the Catholic Church had kind of been right of center on so many issues as it related to abortion, immigration,
gay marriage.
It's
certainly under John Paul II, and then for that cup of coffee he had Pope Benedict.
Yeah, no. they had stayed entrenched on the right, and Pope Francis came as a Jesuit, kind of known as the liberals of the Catholic Church. But it's interesting, right, because it's not only in the context of religion, the Pope has some outsized weight in the political world as well. In fact, he's wagging his finger at President Trump right now over the immigration policies. J.D. Vance, a Catholic, has had to respond to that, saying he understands that that's what the church's teachings are, but we feel differently. With the Pope going, I think of the American cardinals. I don't see them being as left as I perceive Pope Francis
certainly
to be.
Certainly true of Timothy Dolan.
And so I wonder if a new Pope is going to be more of a traditional, more, or if we're going to continue with this more leftist progressive viewpoint inside Catholicism, which helps set a tone around the world, which obviously I kind of like.
So it's interesting on a number of levels, but just in terms of the church itself, I think there was concern, and there's concern generally across Christendom right now, that church attendance is diminishing.
Right.
And that certainly was impacting the Catholic Church. And Francis, who was ministering in South America at the time he became Pope,
the only
South America
was growing. Yeah.
And I think perhaps, I mean, who knows the politics that go on, and I can assure you that College of Cardinals is political.
Right.
But there, I think part of the concern there was that bringing a Pope in that might encourage attendance, and that perhaps Francis had the secret sauce or whatever. But it doesn't look like, from the data I've reviewed, right, it doesn't look like the Catholic Church attendance is appreciably any different than it was, before he ascended.
Yeah, and so obviously there's the religious conversation, and that's a debate inside Catholicism, as there's liberal and conservative Catholics who kind of like different policies. But I mean, the Pope has in the past, Pope John Paul II was a strident voice against communism.
Yeah,
he was a strident voice for the life of the unborn. He talked about traditional marriage. And we've saw that kind of move, and as a result, we've seen the political landscape of the world move. Arguably right now, John, we're watching the whole political world go back to a more conservative thought process. I just wonder if we'll have a Pope that will be doing the same thing going forward with President Trump and President Putin that this one does.
Do you think we'll ever have an American Pope?
I can't imagine, right? Because,
why?
Because we're a superpower. I mean, why would you want the era of, the Catholic Church has got some influence from the U.S. government? I wouldn't imagine that China, which has, 12 million Catholics, Russia, who has a million Catholics, superpowers, I just can't see having it.
Hmm.
Or India. I would think that it would just kind of be traditionals. I don't know. Have we ever had I'm sure we have had British popes, but I don't think we've had a pope from England in modern time.
No.
But I mean, there's a political, do you see where I'm going with the far right ideology of the world
and
the church is going to the left when it was just the opposite a couple of years ago?
Yeah. And this, you mentioned international politics, and it is interesting, that far right party in Germany, lost, it got, I think, 20% of the vote.
Mm-hmm.
And you're seeing in France, the Pen, her candidacy over there. You are seeing a lot of those kinds of movements rising around the world right now. I don't know whether that's a temporary condition or more of a trend. I guess we don't know yet.
I want to get your take on this. James Carville, who is, somebody who's been ever present in my political life. He rose to power when I was, and rose to prominence when I was, becoming politically aware.
Ran the Clinton campaign.
Yeah, and he's been a strong voice for kind of that blue dog, traditional Democrat throughout all these years, strong supporters of the Clintons, including Hillary. He has made the argument that Democrats need to go quiet. Just be silent. Go possum. I got to tell you, John, I think I watch the news at night. It seems to me that the Democrats are rather irrelevant right now. You know, I guess Chuck Schumer's up making his case. I don't know how strong of a case that is for the Democratic Party. Hakeem Jeffries is trying to find his footing. Most of this is fighting in the courts. From a political standpoint, though, sitting and hoping for your opponent to implode is okay, but it can't be your whole strategy. And that's where I, you know, normally would take my cues from James Carville, but I wonder about that.
Well, what I do think the Democrats need to do is get off of all this wokeism.
Right.
That is coming out of the progressive left and the whole, you know, everything's about the transgenders. And look, I mean, you might passionately believe that stuff, but most of the country is not there. And so when you're focusing on issues like that, that, you know, 20 some percent of the public is in agreement with you, you're not advancing a political agenda that way. So I do think they need to stop with all of that cultural business. But I disagree with Carville in that you've got to be an actively engaged opposition force out there and make a case to the American people.
I watched Kentucky's governor, Andy Beshear, yesterday. He's a Democrat in a red state.
Yeah.
Saw him on CNN. It seems to me that is the voice the Democrats should have in pushing back against the Republicans. Why do I say this? Because a lot of those Republicans who are in power right now were folks who rose up and talked about states' rights and not wanting to have the overwhelming federal powers of the Barack Obama and his EPA or whatever it was coming down on them.
Yeah.
And now we see the shoe on the other foot. And for a Democrat to be making the case of, hey, you're cutting Medicaid to the red states. That's how we provide health care. Hey, cutting 10,000 IRS workers in Kansas City is killing a red state, and kind of making the argument that it's not the simple argument of, oh, you're stopping immigration and we're cutting waste, fraud, and abuse. It allows you to put a spotlight on it rather than having Jamie Raskin or, Chuck Schumer or some insider sit there and pretend like they know what's going on. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, a lot of times when parties are in crisis, and I think the Democratic Party is somewhat in crisis right now, it is a governor that emerges. You see that quite a bit throughout the history of the country. Governors emerge and because they're leading a government, they've got a record to run on and then show. And, you know, I've not spent much time looking at Andy Beshear, but he's the kind of profile that, you know, could work for the Democratic Party.
Well, and it could be Jennifer Grant or Gretchen Whitmer. I mean, there are a couple of Democrats who can make that case. I just don't think our face of our opposition comes from Washington, D.C. In fact, I think the face of the Democratic Party in the past coming out of Washington, D.C., which was heavily dominated by the progressive movement, our own Cori Bush was a star of that. I think that's part of the reason the Democrats find themselves with the consequences they have today. And now, rather than having those same people make the argument as to why they were right, it's better to have folks who are actually living it out here saying, wait a minute, man, I'm with you. I wasn't in all that crazy woke stuff, but hey, these jobs mean something to us. Life science here in St. Louis is getting cut, and even private businesses, because the federal programming that takes care of them is coming down. That is a rational argument that Democrats can be putting out there that would appeal to not just the leftist base, but to a lot of people who maybe have held their breath or just went along with Donald Trump. Happy Friday. It's Hancock and Kelly on KMOX. You can see us on Sunday mornings on Hancock and Kelly, the television show, 8:30 on Fox 2 right here in St. Louis. And John, it's just something when you drive in on a day like today, and you realize, you get a little notice on your digital calendar that the Cardinals have a baseball game today down in Jupiter, Florida at 12 o'clock.
They do indeed.
Spring training game. Now,
Houston
it's still
Astros.
Too early for us to be airing them here on KMOX.
We have them on the weekends.
But as spring training rolls on, we have more and more games, and we're less than a month away now.
I know.
To the start of this thing.
So excited.
And you can't help but be excited. And I got to tell you, I was down in the dumps, accepting of the fact that this is a team that's not that we're not invested in. But then there's always that glimmer of hope. I was driving home last night thinking, they still may be able to pull this off. You know, they didn't have that bad of a season last year. They were bad. but they felt like they were a lot worse than their record. And now you got a bunch of people who are playing for their lives. I don't know. It might be kind of fun.
I think it's going to be fun. And, you know, last year the Cardinals won many more games than their underlying statistics would have indicated, largely because the difference between 2024 and 2023, where the Cardinals finished 20 games under 500, was the bullpen. Because the bullpen didn't blow the saves last year that they blew the year before. And there, and as a result, they finished, what were they, 83 and 79, I think.
Right.
So this team, I think, is going to surprise a lot of people. And I think they're going to be a lot better than certainly the national pundits are predicting. Now, they've not had a great spring. It's only been a week that they've been playing games. But there's some of this stuff looks pretty good. And I think having Nolan Arenado around, and he could well have a bounce back year. He had a great game yesterday, home run and a double, three
big
RBIs.
Big fly ball.
I'm here to tell you they're going to be better than the national folks are expecting. And I think they have a shot to win the division.
Whoa, come on now. Really?
All right. The Reds are going to be better. The Cubs are going to be good.
Uh-huh.
The Brewers, you know, you never know what to, they seem to pull rabbits out of hats. So, but I think the Cardinals are going to be in that mix. I really
Nolan do. Nolan Arenado starts the spring training with us, likely going to finish it and start the year with us.
Yeah.
Will he be a Cardinal come
trade deadline? It depends on what the record of this team is. If this team's in the mix,
What gives you hope when you look at our arms? What gives you hope to say that we've got the pitching that can run with the other Central Division teams?
So Sonny Gray's a solid front of the rotation starter. I still am a believer in Steven Matz. He hasn't been healthy here, but he's got good stuff. He's got swing and miss stuff. I think he's going to be pretty good. This Fetty guy that we got from the White Sox is a very solid starting pitcher. Andre Pallante, he got rocked a little bit yesterday, gave up four runs. But he's there. And then Michaelis, you know. And then you got these young guys. This Michael McGreevy has been impressive to me. And he was impressive last year when they brought him up for a little bit. And he's looked good so far this spring. So, you know, now the bullpen's not as strong as it was last year, I don't think. But we'll see.
Who's everybody going crazy over? It's this guy, what's his name, Westerhold?
Weatherholt, J.J. Weatherholt.
Why is everybody going crazy over him?
Well, he's a number one draft pick, and he's got real pop in the bat, a power hitter. He's a home run producer. He plays shortstop, so that's going to be interesting because, you know, you've got Mason Winn there. And Weatherholt's not going to probably make the big league roster this year, but he's a prospect that is very highly regarded throughout baseball and certainly by the Cardinals.
Just a couple blocks west is on Clark Street. You run into our St. Louis Blues, who since the Nation's Cup, which was a fun tournament
to watch.
It was great. This team's on a bit of a roll. I don't know. Are they getting us excited because there's something here or what?
Well, they've won three games in a row for the first time this season, and they've looked good doing it, and they've beaten really good teams. The Washington Capitals last night are the best teams in the Eastern Conference. So, you know, they've got there's about four or five teams in the mix for the final playoff spot, and so I mean that's going to be difficult to navigate for the Blues. But, I mean, they've got a shot. If they keep playing the way they're playing, and their top line is really looked good of late with Robert Thomas and Pavel Buchnevich, I think they've got a shot.
And hockey, probably more than any of the other major sports, lends itself to a team getting hot in its playoffs.
Can.
Because it's so long, it's so drawn out. A team that has its rhythm can lose it. You can get a Jordan Bennington who can wind up standing on his head, making himself a legendary goalkeeper in a season. So, I don't know. It was kind of fun to hear our own buddy Tom Ackerman on Channel 4 the other night calling the game, wasn't it?
Yeah, doing the in between the periods. Tommy did a great job. I texted him. I said, looking good. And,
I have a feeling this won't be the last time we talk sports here in this next couple of minutes because Amy and Chris are going to come in, and I'm sure we're going to have to talk about the white man can't jump.
I don't know. I think we've covered that very well. Chris and Amy are next after the news on KMOX.